Beatrice Ojikangas is the author of 30 cookbooks. Her latest, the just-out Breakfast with Beatrice, is perfect for summer weekends. She's been a food writer and columnist for many publications, including Bon Appetit, Gourmet, and the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Bea was inducted to the James Beard Cookbook Hall of Fame in 2005. She joins us now by phone from Duluth to talk about all things breakfast. Welcome, Bea.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, thanks for being here. Amazing.
This is 31, actually.
Oh, 31. How did I miss one somewhere? Okay. That's good. I bet this book was such fun to write, 250 breakfast recipes. What do you think it is about breakfast that makes it so many people's favorite meal?
Well, I think it should be everyone's favorite meal, frankly, because it's the beginning of a day, and when you have a good breakfast, you start the day out right. You know, so many people just want to skip breakfast because they think they're going to go on a diet and lose weight. Well, what happens? Middle of the morning, they get really hungry, and they start munching on sweet stuff like donuts and sugary things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you eat a good breakfast, you might, by the middle of the morning, feel still pretty comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, breakfast really has to have what I call a quick energy element to it, which comes from fruit, from bread and butter, but actually bread and butter to me is a long-lasting thing. And also... The juices are always good for that, too. And then you need this element that will keep you going for a while. And so that would be grains or protein, you know.
Right.
That really makes you feel kind of full and comfortable.
Mm-hmm. And it lasts a long time.
Right, yeah.
So tell us about Scandinavian breakfast, because I know that those have been an influence on you. What are they traditionally like?
They're different than the American and different from the English breakfast because they generally rely on whole grain breads. We often have eggs in the morning. They don't always have eggs. They might have ham or other kinds of seasoned meats for breakfast. It depends on, of course, where you are, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you're... if you're traveling in Scandinavia, quite often you're faced with a big, long smorgasbord-type breakfast table. And one time when I was in Helsinki, and we were going into a breakfast table, I counted 88 items on that table, from which you pick, you know.
Yes.
But, you know, they had everything from stewed fruits, you know, like, dried fruits in the wintertime. In the summertime, they have fresh fruits cut up and then all kinds of potato dishes and interesting salmon and fish and even herring for breakfast, you know?
Yes, I was in Norway once and I was delighted to find pickles on the breakfast table.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was my kind of breakfast.
Yeah, and... You know, you don't eat everything, but you kind of go back and you take a little bit and then you go back and take a little bit more and depends, you know, but you don't pile your plate way up high like Americans might tend to do. You know?
Right. So how have the Scandinavian breakfast traditions influenced your breakfast creations?
I don't know how much of it is Scandinavian tradition or how much of it was just plain old influence from growing up on a farm in northern Minnesota, because we always had cooked cereal for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
We called it burua, that's Finnish, you know. It was either oatmeal or sometimes what we would do, too, is bake whole grains overnight. I don't have that recipe in the book, but it's just a great way to have something ready for you right away in the morning. But I love stuff like coarse-grained, the oatmeal, you know, that is steel-ground or steel-cut. And often we'll have rice pudding is a good breakfast, you know?
Yeah, it would be. Now, I noticed that you use wild rice in a few of the recipes. in your book, that baked eggs in the wild rice nest sounded especially great.
Yeah, that's good. Well, if you want to be special, like get somebody who's from another part of the country where wild rice isn't quite as abundant, and serve them that, it would be impressive.
And you also make a wild rice porridge, right?
Yeah, and wild rice, of course, that goes from our Native American tradition to have wild rice with dried fruits and nuts and stuff. That's really good. Yeah. And maple syrup.
I noticed, there are a lot of recipes for baked goods in your book. And what advice do you have for people who might be like me, who are a little intimidated at the thought of making yeast breads? That always seems kind of overwhelming.
Yeast breads, to me, are the friendliest things to make, because for the most part, all you have to do is just learn to know the touch. And yeast breads are really forgiving. You can start mixing it up, and then something happens, and you leave the house, and it just sits there and rises, and you go back and punch it down and continue. I mean, to me, yeast breads are not a difficult thing. I guess I grew up with them, and that was probably the reason why they're pretty easy for me.
So you know. I guess what I'm hearing you say is you just have to practice a little more.
Yeah, you practice, and you have to learn not to have fear. Because the only thing about yeast breads that you can do is you can kill the yeast by, adding liquid that's way too hot. You can stunt its growth by using liquids that are cold. But you can also mix up a yeast bread and refrigerate the thing overnight. And in the morning, roll it out and shape it up or whatever the recipe calls for. Let it rise and bake it, and you've got a great breakfast bread.
Okay.
So,
I'll try it again. if you just join us, we're speaking with Beatrice Ojikangas about her latest cookbook, Breakfast with Beatrice. We thought this would be the perfect thing for Memorial Day weekend. People might have a little more time in the summer to try some of these wonderful-looking recipes. So, were some of these recipes ones that you were already, that you've already prepared for other books? Is this kind of a best-of cookbook? Or explain how you put these together.
Well, actually, I got a lot of help from the editors at Minnesota Press. They were amazing. They were helpful. We sort of mined a lot of recipes out of my previously published books. And then we looked at them and we updated them. And there's a lot of basic good things in there, all the way back to my Scandinavian cooking, which was one of the first books that I did. Or even the Finnish cookbook, which is one of the first ones, is the very first one.
Okay.
So, but we did go through and comb out that which would be appropriate for this book. And start reading them and I get hungry to make them.
Well, I'm afraid that was happening to me too when I was preparing to chat with you here. They sound so good. I've definitely marked a few for testing. What's your favorite or two favorite recipes or so in the book?
Well, it might have been the very first recipes, the Finnish pancakes, which is a Swedish Finnish pancakes. Very easy to do. They are just, it's a real thin batter. And you make these thin pancakes, and you can serve them with fresh fruit or lingonberry jams if you happen to get them, or cloudberry jam or whatever, and or just, cinnamon sugar and butter. Mm-hmm. Another one I really love is a puffy pancake. I'm going to be doing that this weekend. And a baked, pannukakku, which is a Finnish thing. It's such a basic thing. I know every country has one like that, but this one is so simple. And all you have to remember with the hardly have to use the recipe. Just heat the oven up to 450, but I take equal measure of flour, milk, and eggs, and add a little bit of sugar and a little bit of salt to that, and whisk it all up until it's real smooth. And the secret to making this really work out is to mix the dough the night before. So I'll have a pitcher full of this panukaku dough in the refrigerator, cover it, of course, and pour it out in the morning into a hot pan and into the hot oven, and it puffs up. It's really fun. Mm-hmm. And when, especially when you have company, it makes it really easy to serve a quick breakfast. Get some fresh fruit to go with it and some whipped cream, and kids will go for it, I'll tell you.
It sounds terrific. It sounds almost sounds like a giant popover.
It is. And do you know, when you mention popover, you can use that same recipe.
Oh.
Equal parts of flour, milk, and eggs. Equal measure of flour, milk, and eggs. And then make popovers. Mm-hmm. So it's only, if it's only two of you, you can bake up two popovers if you want to. And put the rest of the dough in the refrigerator and do it the next morning because it keeps.
That sounds perfect. Well, yeah. I have to ask you this, even though I know you mentioned earlier this is your 31st cookbook. Any more cookbooks on the horizon right now?
Well, there's some funny things that are kind of part of something I've wanted to do for a long time. My mother-in-law grew up forever was on a diet. And I've got, now that we've been packing up to move, I have this box that I call Grace's Diets, diet books. And I put them into categories of, you know, the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And I think it would be really fun to trace the way the diets go back. And, you know, they started right after World War II, when all of a sudden there was no more rationing of foods. So people thought they could eat all they want of sugar and butter and everything else, you know, and phenomenal amounts. And they started gaining weight. Before that, they were very, very, you know, healthy and stuff. So it would be a fun one to do. And I'm not quite sure how I'll approach that. But
yeah, sounds like an interesting angle to that history, though.
Yeah. But, you know, people don't realize this, but right after World War II, you know, all these, during the war, everybody was in this war effort, and that was, they were producing stuff for it. And all of a sudden, these companies had to have something that they had to produce so they could keep being a company. And so the diets became part of it. You know, the advertising men invented deodorant.
I didn't know that.
Stuff like that. I mean, that all came at about the same time because they had to have, there were mixes that were developed for the troops. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden afterwards, they didn't have a market for them. So that was when cake mixes and all these kind of mixes became part of our culture.
Interesting. So
isn't that fun?
Yeah. So it could almost be kind of a history of marketing or convenience foods or something as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
They developed out of necessity just because there were all these companies that were producing stuff, and when the war ended, they didn't need it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have to ship it out. So
sure.
Then they have to convince people they need it.
And they've been very good at that, haven't they?
You sure have. Yep.
Well, Bea, I want to thank you so much for your time today. It's just a terrific looking book. Like I said, I can't wait to try a few of the breakfast recipes and keep on writing these cookbooks. They're such fun.
Well, thank you. It's fun to do because there's always another idea. Oh, I look at these and I think, oh, I've got to make that. One of my favorites is blueberry, cream cheese blueberry sour cream coffee cake.
Ooh, that sounds wonderful.
It is a good one.
Okay.
And that's in there.
we'll check that out. Thank you again, Bea.
Okay.
Appreciate
You're
your
welcome.
Time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for
Thank
calling.
You.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye.